come back and take any questions.
Yeah, can you give me, so I can stand, so I can talk to everybody rather than have my back at somebody? Thank you. And thanks everybody for coming. Just to correct that, biggest third party on the left, I've got the highest percentage in 100 years. Remember Tom Golisano, that was the billionaire's party. So he got a little higher percentage than I did. But dollar for dollar, I got more votes than he did by a long shot. So my name's Howie Hawkins. I've been active in movements for peace, justice, labor, and the environment since the 1960s. Got started with civil rights and anti-Vietnam War. I went to Dartmouth College, I was in the Marine Corps, worked as a carpenter, a worker co-op organizer, and a Teamster, recently retired from UPS, where I worked as a warehouse worker for the last 17 years. But the reason I'm running, and I ran in 2010 to get the ballot line, and 2018 to get the 5%.
2014.
It's 2018 now. It's been three campaigns. The reason I'm running is that the two government parties, the two parties that's been in power, cannot solve anything. Let's talk about lead poisoning. 47 years ago, the Surgeon General issued an urgent warning that our children are getting poisoned by this dust off the lead paint. You need to test them, treat them if their blood levels are elevated, and remediate the problem. 47 years ago. And what do we got today? In the zip code we're sitting in, 38% of children have more than 5 micrograms per deciliter, which is the federal standard above which you need to be treated. 38%. My city's 40%. Buffalo's also 40%. This is criminal neglect by the two government parties that's in the power structure. They can't solve problems. They gerrymander their districts. We don't have competitive elections. Every 10 years, you know, they redraw the lines. Democrats, Republicans, they divide it up. So you got majority Democrat in one district, majority Republican in another. Not much competition because, you know, there's overwhelming one party or the other. So, I was looking for that. That's what I was looking for.
I'm sorry, you have to enter the code so I can use it.
Oh, okay. All right.
And keep on talking. You can do both things at once.
No, I don't multitask. Multitasking, you don't get things right. So where was I? I was talking about the gerrymandering. Okay. So they have an election, and they fight like cats and dogs about a few social issues. You know, guns, gods, gays, and abortion, right? But when it comes down to doing business, they get behind closed doors. You're really on the same team. I mean, I'll use an example that I just went through. One of the founders of the Progressive Caucus in Congress, George Miller, from the district just north of Barbara Lee that Ron Dellums used to have. It's Richmond, Concord, in the Bay Area. And I came up in the Bay Area. I knew this guy when I was coming out of high school. He was an up-and-coming politician. He was a sponsor on the House side, along with a Senate Republican, to remove the protection in the Employment Retirement Income Security Act of 1974 that guaranteed us our earned pensions could not be cut. And they attached that to the omnibus spending bill at the end of 2014. And so, just before I retired, they cut my pension 20%. The existing retirees got cut 30%. U.S. Treasury Department approved it. This was bipartisan. You know, the point is, they don't care about us. They care about the financial institutions that back them when they run for office, and the real estate industry, and the oil and gas industry. So that's why we're running. Now, the program I want us to implement in New York, I call it a Green New Deal for New York. And it's the New Deal fulfilled, like Franklin Roosevelt talked about in his last State of the Union address, said everybody ought to have the right to a job, or if they can't work, an income above poverty, a decent home, a good education, comprehensive health care. Some of these things were in the Democratic Party platform from the 40s to the 70s. Then they started dropping off, like the right to a job. That was the Humphrey Hawkins bill, 1977. Carter gutted it, so told the Fed, balance unemployment and inflation. They always worked on inflation. It was high inflation at that point, but there was no program of public jobs for the unemployed. And then when Clinton got the nomination in 1992, national health insurance, what we call single payer. was knocked out of the platform. So now we got Democrats who are as conservative as Republicans on economic issues. And the basic point is, when it comes to the economic class issues that affect us, they're on the same page, and they're not with the people. And so what happened to that thing was it was picked up by the civil rights movement. And, you know, the fact is that the New Deal was segregated. So Byron Rustin and A. Philip Randolph and Martin Luther King and Michael Harrington, those people were in the Socialist Party, the Little Socialist Party. They organized a march on Washington for jobs and freedom. And they said, we want this economic bill of rights. We want a guaranteed income, a job, a big housing program. That was part of the March on Washington. Then you had the Freedom Budget in 1966, which was, here Congress, here's a budget to fulfill that program. And King tried to continue that with the Poor People's Campaign in 1968. Now, from my point of view, there was a problem. Rustin and Randolph said, oh, Johnson won on a landslide. We got labor, liberals, and blacks together. They can rule, and we just need to get the Democrats to do that. And then Johnson goes off to war in Vietnam, and King says, you're going to lose the war on poverty in Vietnam. And Rustin and Randolph, who had been war resistors, Randolph resisted World War I. He was in there with Eugene Debs when the Socialist Party opposed that war. Rustin went to prison for World War II because he said, I'm not going to fight in a segregated army. And now they were silent on Vietnam. And King came out and spoke out against it. A lot of people turned against him. But he said, we can't count on the Democrats or the Republicans. We got to have our own movement, our own political independence, and that should be our basis of power. And he wanted to go to Washington and basically camp out on the Mall and do civil disobedience until Congress came through with his freedom budget, or what they called in the economic, Poor People's Campaign, the Economic Bill of Rights. So that's what the Green New Deal is. We want to continue that demand and finally fulfill it, this Economic Bill of Rights. And then we call it the Green New Deal because, as we were talking about earlier, you know, our future is imperiled by this climate crisis, this climate emergency. So we're calling for 100% clean energy by 2030. We know it's technically and economically feasible. We have a study by scientists, engineers, and economists from Cornell and Stanford that documents how to do that. That came out in 2013. And we now have legislation. Mark actually had a lot to do with writing it. I've been campaigning for this, two campaigns, 2010, 2014. Now we got legislation. And besides being what we need to do, what the climate science says we need to do in industrial states like New York, if we're going to avoid runaway global warming and a climate catastrophe, it's also going to revive the economy. Because that study showed it would create hundreds of thousands of good jobs in manufacturing and construction, building this system out. And once you build it out, you don't have fuel costs. You don't have to buy oil, gas, coal, nuclear rods. The sun shines, the rivers flow, the winds blow, the waves come in and out. There's all these forms of natural energy around us. You build the technology to harvest it, and your energy costs will be cut in half, according to the study, which will help the economy, lower the cost of living for all of us, lower the cost of doing business. So that is an outline of what we want to do with the Green New Deal. And what it's really about is revitalizing the public sector services and infrastructure, energy, broadband, roads and bridges, housing, and transportation. You know, the big problems down in New York City with the public housing and the MTA have just disintegrated under Cuomo's watch. So we want to invest in those things, and it also the way we're going to revitalize the economy upstate. You know, what Cuomo tries to do is give tax breaks and subsidies and contracts and favors to his donors. And so you get all this corruption, like the Buffalo Billion and the bribery for the CPV plant down there in the Hudson Valley. And it's the old trickle-down thing that we've been living with for 40 years. It never trickles down. You give money to the rich, and then they're supposed to invest and hire, and then we'll get the benefits. But when we're so poor, we can't afford to buy what's already being produced. They have no reason to expand. So instead of, when they get a windfall, what do they do with it? Stock buybacks, mergers and acquisitions. They just rearrange and concentrate the wealth we already have. They don't create new wealth. We know that from the windfall from the Trump corporate tax cut. Little bit, highly publicized, went to wages and bonuses. But the lion's share of it, I mean 98% of it, went to stock buybacks, which jacks up the stock price, which the management likes. So our approach is to invest in the things that everybody benefits from, like the public infrastructure, the jobs that come with it. We want to raise the minimum wage. We were fighting for 15 back in 2010. Now Cuomo says he did it. Well, let me tell you, my consolation prize for my pension cut is I can go back to work and get my little pension, but I lose all my seniority. And I go back to UPS on little trucks after this election if I'm not governor. I'll be paid the minimum wage. It's 10:40. Cuomo says it's 15. He got it to 15. No, he didn't. Upstate, it gets to 12:50 in 2021, and then they're going to study it. It'll still be a poverty wage. And when the people can't buy what's already being produced, business is not going to expand. On the other hand, if you help the people at the bottom, they got money in their pocket, they spend it, then business expands and hires to meet that demand. So our approach is bottom up instead of this top down, trickle down, and don't trickle down that we've got from Cuomo and the Republicans for decades now. That's why the real wage in this country is a dollar less than it was in 1973. It was 23 something then, 23.60, and now it's 22.60 and change. The wealth in this state, the income in 1980 was 12% of all the income went to the top 1%. Today it's 31%. There's 90,000 taxpayers in the state getting $375 billion a year. That's $4 million each. Now, that's how we're going to pay for the Green New Deal. We're going to have more progressive taxation. We're going to do like we did in the 70s when the bottom bracket was 2%. They raised it to 4%. That happened under Mario Cuomo, which everybody kind of thinks back as a New Deal liberal, but he talked that way. He didn't act that way. And then the top bracket was cut in half from over 15% to 6.85%, and now we have a little surcharge on it, but that expires next year. And Governor Cuomo, you always got to push him to get that millionaire's tax. So we want to expand the brackets for multimillionaires on income, lower the bottom brackets, make it more progressive. That will give us $10 billion, according to a spreadsheet we got from an economist. We'll be unveiling that formally in a couple weeks. The stock transfer tax.
Would most people get a tax cut out of that?
Say what?
Would most people get a tax cut?
The bottom half of the income scale, yeah. We'd lower those brackets back to the way they were in the 1970s. And that means people have money in their pocket, they'll spend it, because working people got expenses to meet. Right now, the problem is we can't pay our bills. We're in record debt, and a lot of people are having trouble paying the rent, and that's why homelessness is going up. It's now 90,000 people in New York State. That's under Cuomo's watch, really has gone up. So the stock transfer tax, that's pennies on a trade, and it generates between $13 and $16 billion in the last few years. We give it right back. Since 1981, this is part of the trickle-down economics, we collect it, but then we give it right back to those traders on Wall Street. And that's just politicians benefiting their benefactors who give them the campaign donations. And then there's up to $10 billion in this Trump corporate tax windfall. And we're saying if that's not spent on raising workers' wages or hiring new people, it should come back to the public treasury. We'll keep it in the state. It would have gone to the federal treasury. And we'll use it for the things people need. So that's another piece of the program. And at this point, I guess the last thing I'll say is, okay, so a lot of people say, man, Howie, that all sounds good, but I'm scared to death of these Republicans, especially in the age of Trump. And what I would say, first of all, is which Republican? Cuomo or Trump? I mean, Molinaro. You know, Cuomo and Trump, there's a lot in common, right? Everybody around him is getting caught for doing something wrong and headed off to prison. And anybody that turns on him, they turn on them real quick. They demand total loyalty. I told that to a Republican congressman I ran into recently, and he looked around, he said, you're right, Howie. He wouldn't say it publicly, but you know, I think everybody knows that. But I think the biggest check we can tell people, you don't have to worry because the Democrats are still going to have the Assembly. They'll probably have the Senate. So if it is Molinaro, because I get a lot of votes, and maybe some other people take votes from Cuomo, Molinaro is going to kind of be boxed in. He can't really do that much damage. On the other hand, the Democrats or Republicans can't solve problems. That's why we're trying to get in there as Greens. And If we don't win the office, we can still have enormous influence, like I argue we did in 2014. That's why we got the ban on fracking. You know, I've been campaigning for that from 2010. Cuomo never made a commitment on it, but after the election, he put his finger to the wind, and when the health department said it might endanger the water, he said, okay, we'll ban it. paid family leave. We actually got that one. The minimum wage, not so much, but he talks about it. Tuition free at CUNY and SUNY schools, not so much, but he's talking about it. So it's better to vote for what you want and make the politicians come to you than to vote for the Democrats as a lesser evil, even on a line like the Working Families line, because in the end, you get lost in the sauce. They don't know why you voted for the Democrat, and Cuomo takes that as a vote for what he wants to do. On the other hand, if we get a big vote, Cuomo's looking over there saying, how do I compete for those votes? And he might do some things that we want. So I'll stop there and thank everybody
for listening. Do you get any money for your campaign or anything?
Yeah, okay. The way we raise money, unlike Andrew Cuomo, I actually have more donors than he did in 2014. But my average donor was $35, and his was $3,500. So, you know, he had 100 times more for every donor. So he had millions, and I had, you know, tens of thousands. But we can do a lot with our tens of thousands. If you measure dollar per vote, we got the most votes. We won that election. So, yes, if you can make a small contribution, you know, we do it Bernie Sanders style, although Bernie really did it Howie Hawkins style, because I did this before he did running for president. But anyway, he did it on a bigger scale. Take a contribution slip and, you know, fill it out and put your contribution with it and get it back to me. So
now we can take questions. So comments.
50,000 votes, remind me again.
50,000 votes gets us a ballot line.
A ballot line?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I got 60,000 in 2010 and 184,000 in 2014. It'll take about two to two and a half million to beat him. You know, that's what we figured, because if he's beat, you know, Republicans will get some, Stephanie Miner will get some, the Libertarian will get some, I'll get a lot. And so we still got a ways to go, but I'm hoping that when the primary is over on Thursday, you know, we'll clearly be the last progressive standing. Looks like Cynthia Nixon, if she doesn't beat Cuomo, which the latest poll says she's actually been losing ground, she's going to step aside. They got a plan for that, so the Working Families line ends up open for Cuomo. And so I'll be on the left. There'll be two Clinton Democrats in the center, Stephanie Miner and Andrew Cuomo, Wall Street Democrats, and then two conservatives on the right. So hopefully.
Right. I was going to say, having a ballot line makes it a lot easier for us to run. Like Howie and I did not have to collect any signatures to run as statewide candidates as the Green Party designee. But to run even for like Congress or State Assembly or State Senate or Town Board or City Council, you only need to go and collect signatures from 5% of the Greens in the district. So you're talking about 20 or 30 signatures. How, you know, used to be a great weight loss, but you know, when you're running as an independent, you literally have to spend the entire month of July and August begging everybody for thousands of signatures, far more than the major parties are required. It is a good weight loss when you're doing it 10 hours a day in the hottest time, but it drains you. And by the time the petitioning period is done, you collapse, you maybe get some energy back in October, and then it's too late. So it is powerful to have it, and we like to keep it. It makes it easier for us to challenge.
So you have it now?
We have it now.
We've had it.
Thanks to Howie.
You get it for a four-year election cycle.
Okay.
So
okay. We
need 50,000 votes to be on the ballot for the next 4 years. And, you know, it's really, so the way the Greens will become a major third party is from the bottom up. A lot of, you know, town board, school board, village mayors. We've done that in New York, not in large numbers, but in, you know, all across the state. Next step is getting on city councils like Utica, Syracuse, New York City, then the state legislature, and then Congress. And if we get that far, then we can run for any office, senator, president, and, you know, the public and the media will take us seriously, because, you know, if you can win a congressional seat, why not a Senate seat?
And nationally, actually, the Green Party wins about 30% of the races it runs in. Now, the big exception is New York State. And that is because in most parts of the country, most local elections, not your state legislature, not your Congress, but all other elections are nonpartisan. So you don't have the name of the party on the ballot. You have to understand which candidate you want to vote for. And so basically we win about a third. We are basically competitive in those nonpartisan races. And the races we have won in New York State have tended to be like mayors of villages and school boards where you don't have the party affiliation. And it's harder when you get to the partisan race because a lot of people are like, I'm here to vote for president. Who are these other people? Just vote the ballot line. Oh, and one other thing, I would like this little story about, so how we finished third in the election, fourth in the political party. So now the Green Party is the fourth party on the ballot. But I used to tell people, when you go in to vote for the Green Party, say a little prayer. Get down on your knees, say, thank God, and then look up, because that's where our vote, our name's going to be right down there at the bottom.
Bottom of the machine, yeah. People used to, could not see us. Right. So we say, kneel down, pray, and then look straight ahead.
So now we're a little higher at the top, so a little bit easier to find us. That's very, very helpful.
Yeah, another thing to think about is there are 8 lines with parties, right? Ballot lines. But there are only 3 parties. Only 3 people created those 8 parties. It was Andrew Cuomo, Rob Astorino, the Republican, and me, the Green. Because, you know, Cuomo created women's equality, working families, and independence last time, and Astorino created reform and conservative. Those parties routinely cross-endorse major parties. You don't really have that many choices on our ballot. Because if you look at it, you see the same name. I mean,
that's right.
In most states where they allow fusion, which is 7 or 8, they just have a candidate on there once, and then underneath the candidate, they put the parties that endorse them, which I think would be an improvement to our ballot, because right now fusion is very confusing in our state.
And one thing I'll also mention is the Green Party is really one of the largest parties, if not the largest party in the world. One can worry how many communists are members of the Communist Party in China. We're all over the planet. Think globally, act locally. And almost every other democracy in the world has proportional representation, where basically you are awarded seats in legislative bodies based on the percentage of the vote you get.
Right.
So if you get 5% of the vote or 10% of the vote, you get 5% of the seats or 10% of the seats. And the Greens continue to climb up. We're particularly strong in the European Union because for some reason we get twice as many votes percentage-wise for the European Union as we do in individual countries. Plus, since we're pretty much in all of the European countries, we're a real influence in the European Union and we're able to drive it. And one of the things I do, just to amuse myself, is anytime a foreign country takes action on climate change, I Google where's the Green Party in that country. And invariably, the Green Party is part of the ruling coalition, and the junior member usually, but we usually say, you can do what you want on the other issues in exchange for us being able to do our climate change work. The United States is one of only 3 democracies that did not have proportional representation. We were a very radical country in 1776. In 2018, we're a very conservative, very undemocratic country, and then you get the whole problem with no real campaign finance rules. You can buy politicians, you know, buying politicians considered an exercise in free speech. It's horrible. And then you get the whole voter suppression stuff, you know. And it's a low-income neighborhood. For some reason, that you got fewer voting machines, fewer polling places, the machines are breaking down, the lines are 3 hours long in the, you know, low-income communities, and, you know, people can't take off work if they're a low-income worker. They really conspire to suppress the vote and, you know, maintain the status quo.
Okay.
Any last questions? We'll be hanging around for a few minutes. We want to thank Pete for this wonderful spread of food, and all of you for coming. And if you can't make a donation, we do hope you sign the attendance list so we can send you some emails and remind you what's going on. And we have lots of literature you can take home and hand out to the neighbors or bring to church. And, you know, Howie's not too far from Utica, right? How far are you? He's in Syracuse. I'm about 2 hours. He's about an hour.
You're in Syracuse?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want, you know, Howie to come and speak at your church or a community group, I'm happy to ship Howie out.
I'm glad you guys came out, and I really enjoyed your presentation. I basically came here because of Pete, and didn't know a lot about the Green Party. Actually, probably didn't know anything about the Green Party. I've always wondered why we couldn't have more than the two-party system here in the United States, and I like the platform. I think it's kind of scary to think that people would, it's scary for me to vote for anybody but one of the two major parties, just because it's almost like I'm throwing away a vote. But when I hear you explain that you really are able to move at least the Democrats some to the left, and have some of your platform adopted by them because they need to.
I think you're wasting your vote if you vote for who you don't really want.
Right.
Because you're afraid of somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, just vote for what you want and make everybody come to you.
Yeah.
You know, that's my argument. And if I could do a whole hour-long lecture on the history of third parties. You know, slavery was the Liberty Party, right?
Yeah.
Working class issues was the Working Men's Party. They were started here in New York State.
Well, don't get
him
started, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying, you go through the history, you know, voting rights, civil rights, abolition of slavery, women's right to vote, labor law protections. Third parties put them, we bring things forward that the two major parties don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
And we force them to deal with it.
Yeah.
And the next step is to actually replace one of them, or you know, and let them, you know, be the minority for
well,
a while.
I'm hearing that, but you know, right now we're in crisis, so you know, we got to get rid of the
racist reactionary in the White House. Yeah, no doubt.
We got to get rid of the Republicans.
No, I'm rooting for a Democratic Congress. Let's hope they fall through and impeach him.
Yeah.
I mean, people say, oh, they got to build a case. Man, I've seen enough.
The
evidence,
built. Yeah, the built.
Obstruction of justice for sure.
That's right.
And I think the crimes. I mean, this guy is—he's organized crime. Yeah. He's laundering money for the Russian mob in New York, the drug cartels in Panama, and his daughter. I saw this one thing. She was in Azerbaijan. They built a tower like a mile from the Black Sea, where all the other resorts are.
Right.
With money from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, that's violating sanctions as well as laundering money. I mean, this guy is so dirty.
Yeah.
And you know what? We got a, let me just say, we got an attorney general candidate.
Yeah.
His name's Michael Sussman.
Okay.
If you ever saw the film on HBO called Show Me a Hero, about the segregation fights in, or desegregation fights in Yonkers, he's the lawyer depicted in that. He fought that for the NAACP from the 70s right up into the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Got him over $100 million. Settlement for the discrimination. He was the guy that represented the Black and Latino civil service workers who were dealing with bias tests and promotion policy. Got them $45 million. When D.J. Henry, a Black man, young student from Pace, was shot by a white cop in Westchester and they wouldn't prosecute, he took him to civil court, got $6 million for the family. This guy got a resume this high compared to all the other candidates, Democrat and Republican. Been to Supreme Court, hundreds of cases in federal court. This guy is no joke.
Right.
And so he's our attorney general candidate.
Okay.
And he will go after Wall Street because it's not just Donald Trump or Jared Kushner that is laundering money. Look at the lights in those high rises, the expensive, you know, penthouses down in New York City in Manhattan at night. There are not many lights on.
Right.
There's nobody living there.
Right.
People are investing from around the world. It's dirty money in. They flip it, clean money out. And boy, they're a prosecutor's a dream, you know, down there. But the problem is the real estate industry are the biggest financial backers of New York politicians.
Mm-hmm.